Peyton Manning is the Associated Press Most Valuable Player of the Year. He was chosen by 32 of the 50 sportscasters and writers who choose the winner. This marks the third time he's been so honored. Manning says this has been the most rewarding regular season in his 11 years in the NFL. He had two operations on his left knee in the preseason and a 3-4 start to the season before winning 9 straight games to secure a wild card berth and a meeting tomorrow night with San Diego. Manning called the award emblematic of what others, including owner Jim Irsay, President Bill Polian, and coach Tony Dungy, did to help rally the Colts. Manning calls it a team award. The Cotton Bowl is the first bowl game of the day today. The contest in Dallas features two ranked schools, with number 8 Texas Tech facing number 20 Mississippi. Early in the second half, Texas Tech leads Mississippi, the score 21-14. The Sugar Bowl is on tap tonight in New Orleans. This year's game features unbeaten and 7th-ranked Utah against the 4th-ranked team in the AP poll, Alabama. The Crimson Tide lost their first game, the SEC Championship game, to Florida, and in doing so failed to qualify for the BCS Championship game. The University of Illinois women's basketball team will be looking for their first Big Ten win of the season tomorrow when they host Minnesota. The Illini fell to Wisconsin at Assembly Hall yesterday 53-38, giving them an 0-3 mark in conference play. Free tickets are available for tomorrow's game in an effort to pack the hall. The game, to be televised by CBS, tips off at 11 a.m. The men, who defeated 9th-ranked Purdue in overtime on Tuesday, are next in action Sunday at Michigan. There are 5 games on tap in men's college basketball tonight. The highest-ranked team on the court is number 8, Texas, with the Longhorns at home to Appalachian State. The rest of the schedule has number 12, UCLA at Oregon State, 13th-ranked Syracuse on the road at South Florida, number 17, Arizona State visiting Sanford, and 19th-ranked Baylor at home to South Carolina. The Bulls are in Ohio tonight to face off with the Cleveland Cavaliers. The St. Louis Blues are on the road to take on the Carolina Hurricanes tonight. That's sports.
Today's programs are made possible in part by 10,000 Villages in downtown Champaign, offering ground and whole bean coffee purchased from farmers using internationally recognized fair trade standards.
Now that a new year has started, we're all going to have to stop using some very popular words and phrases from 2008. That's because they're on the annual banishment list issued by the Language Guardians at Lake Superior State University in Michigan for misuse, overuse, and general uselessness. Herb Trix reports.
It all started 34 years ago when the public relations director for the college and some friends cooked up the idea as a way to promote Lake Superior State and entertain people on an otherwise slow day for news, January 1st. And when nominations came pouring in during the following weeks for a second list, he knew he was onto something. John Shibley, one of this year's co-compilers, says between 5 and 6,000 nominations were received for the latest banishment list. And not surprisingly, the presidential campaign resulted in a lot of nominations.
Considering that it was an election year, it was pretty quiet for the political front. But we did get Maverick. That tipped the scales at over 1,000 nominations. First Dude, as in reference to Sarah Palin's husband, who was First Dude of Alaska because she's the governor, that also receives over 1,000 nominations. But those are the only two real political ones that led the pack this year. We are getting a lot of nominations now for Blago, which is Blagojevich. That's the governor of Illinois, but that started upticking maybe a week ago.
Some words and phrases linked to the economy and recession also irritated a lot of people. Shibley says many people got tired of the Wall Street-Main Street combination, beaten to death by politicians and pundits. And the word bailout also made it to the banishment list.
People are just saying, geez, you know, I wish bailout meant something else. Like the nominator sort of refers to the only time he wants to hear bailout is when it applies to, number one, a relative, and number two, the relative that needs to get bail posted to get out of jail. You know, that's sort of a harmless way that bailout used to be used, but now it's taken on, you know, greater scales, greater ramifications.
Text messaging was also responsible for a rash of nominations.
We also had our first non-word, non-phrase and that is the, I guess, emoticon, you could call it, for text messaging. It's a less than symbol coupled with the numeral 3, and if you look at that sideways, it's a heart. So rather than typing out, I love you, or I love a good meal, you type in I, less than 3, and then your noun. Dash monkey is something that's commonly found on the web. If you have a menial task that needs to be done, you go to SurveyMonkey, and SurveyMonkey will compile a survey and give you data. There's FoodMonkey. There's a bunch of other different slash monkey websites out there. It's becoming quite a popular term to do something that's routine and can be done through a website.
And even though most of us want to protect the environment, quite a few have come to hate newly popular words and phrases, such as carbon footprint and any form of the word green.
They just think they hear too much of it, so it garnered quite a number of votes. I think a lot of people object to it being exploited for marketing. The carbon footprint nominator said, he can imagine an atom of carbon that forgot to wear its shoes.
Banishing these words and phrases is fun and gives a lot of people a chance to blow off some steam. But Shibley says there is a serious side to it all.
Anytime you can discuss language, I think that's constructive. And you can either discuss language in a serious way in a classroom setting or in a very analytical way, or you can just throw something like this out into the public every year like we do and just see what falls into place. It's a nice little snapshot of what phrases and words, number one, bug people, and what's on people's minds, too. And people attach different degrees of importance to this. It's very therapeutic for some people. And other people get into the spirit of the thing and sort of say, hey, you missed this one, and they have a really funny reason why.
He figures he and his co-compiler will do a total of 500 interviews about the latest word banishment list on TV, radio, and for newspapers. And he invites submissions for next year. Go to lssu.edu. And fresh from my staycation over the holidays, that word is also now banished. I'm Herb Trix.
And coming up on the next Sidetrack, we'll start 2009 by looking back at the best interviews and stories we featured in 2008. We'll revisit the Black Velvet Painting Museum, hear an interview with B-movie queen Tura Satana, star of Faster Pussycat, Kill Kill, and listen to campaign audio from the 1908 presidential candidates. Join host Jason Croft for those stories and more on the next Sidetrack tomorrow night at 6 p.m. Now that the price of energy has dropped, the cost of heating your home won't be as high as experts were predicting this summer, but millions of Americans are still struggling to pay their heating bills. Rebecca Williams reports in some rare cases, having your heat shut off can mean being evicted from your home. And in the worst case, it can mean losing your children.
Demetria Salinas has 3 kids. Money is tight, and she's worried about getting through the winter.
I'm kind of nervous because, I mean, what if we don't have enough to pay the bills? Then what do we do?
She says she tries to save on heat by putting extra sweaters on her kids and turning the furnace off.
Put the gas on for a little bit and then turn it off, and when it gets a little bit colder, put it back on. But it does definitely mean layering up, even in the house.
She says that's hard on her kids. Many parents are in these impossible situations. The National Energy Assistance Directors Association has found low-income people often have to choose between paying their heating bills and feeding their children. 31% said they kept their home so cold it felt unsafe. 20% of low-income people said they had their electricity or gas shut off for some amount of time. Phil Thompson works for Capital Area Community Services in Lansing, Michigan. His agency helps people pay their bills and talks with utility companies to buy people more time. He says usually utilities won't shut heat off in the coldest days of winter.
Most utility companies are sympathetic to the situation of not having heat in the wintertime. There's always those horror stories of a senior or a handicapped individual that froze because their utility was turned off. So they're going to do everything they can to keep that from happening.
But Thompson says he sees a lot of people get their heat shut off in the spring, and it can still get cold then. Now, in some states, if the heat is shut off, even for just a little while, you can be evicted.
In some cases where there's small children, it's very possible that the Child Protective Services would get involved and possibly remove the kids from the household when there's no utilities.
That's right. The state can take kids away if the utilities are shut off. We talked with foster care workers in several states, and they all said that this is rare. They said they do everything they can to keep families together, and they can sometimes help pay heating bills. But they also said a home with no heat is often a sign that something else is wrong. Andrea Yocum is an investigator with Child Protective Services north of Detroit.
Typically, there's other reasons why they're removed. For example, if the family is just not willing to pay their bills because they're using their money for other things like drugs or alcohol.
But Yocum says sometimes it's just not the family's fault.
I have had families that were evicted as a result of their landlord not paying their bills, and utilities turned off the same because the landlord's not taking care of what's happening within the home.
If families are evicted, it can be temporary, maybe just a couple days until the heat's back on. But for families living in poverty, having the heat turned off again can happen as soon as the next bill is late. There is some good news this year. There's federal money that states use to help people pay their heating bills. Because fuel prices were expected to go up, Congress doubled that pot of money this year. Most states are reporting that they're in a better position to help people now. But winter is just beginning, and they're already getting a lot more people asking for help with their heating bills than in the past. For the Environment Report, I'm Rebecca Williams.
At factory farms, cows and pigs produce a large quantity of manure, and that sometimes causes a lot of pollution. Julie Grant reports that one scientist says he has a solution. Genetically modify pigs so they produce less pollution. But to be successful, people have to be willing to eat genetically modified meat.
Marie Borello says pig and cow poop is killing everything in some of the water he studies. He's a geologist and has been researching water pollution with chemists and biologists at Alma College in Michigan. Borello says there's no fish in parts of the river because all the animal feces running off of nearby farms.
It's very obvious. It's this kind of brown, mucky, murky-looking substance.
That poop is full of phosphorus, nitrogen, and other things that cause pollution problems. It creates algae that clogs up waterways and sucks out all the oxygen. Borello says some of the farms house more than 10,000 hogs. Farmers sometimes hold 20 million gallons of pig manure in lagoons. They liquefy it and spray it on fields for fertilizer. But Borello says it's too much manure, so it runs off the land and into the waterways. In some places, it's the same water used for drinking water, and the same rivers drain into the Great Lakes. On the northern side of the lakes, a Canadian scientist says he's found a possible solution to this pig pollution problem. It's called the EnviroPig. Cecil Forsberg has genetically modified pigs so they produce less pollution in their waste. I met him at his research barn at the University of Guelph in Ontario. There are no windows, just a ventilation system. And wow, it's hard to concentrate. The smell of pig waste is so strong. He introduces me to a group of EnviroPigs. They're about a year and a half old. He says they have no detectable difference from regular pigs.
They have four legs, two ears, a snout, and they like to dig in the shavings.
But while most pigs poop out a lot of polluting phosphorus, Forsberg has made the EnviroPig into a much better machine for digesting phosphorus. He's no Dr. Frankenstein, but to do it, he did use DNA from a mouse. He says it's considered a safe technique, but he knows it makes people cringe.
There's no mouse in these pigs except for this little fragment of DNA.
The mouse DNA allowed Forsberg to add a bacterial gene to the pigs. It's that bacteria that triggers the pig's salivary glands to start the digestion of phosphorus. Forsberg says the waste from these pigs does a lot less damage to the environment than most pigs.
There's a reduction in the phosphorus in the manure by up to 60%. And that's important because phosphorus is the component in manure that is the first one that's problematic.
And it's part of what chokes the oxygen out of waterways, killing fish and other aquatic species. Forsberg wants to see EnviroPigs bred on the global scale to reduce pollution from the growing number of large-scale hog farms. Back in Michigan, water specialist Murray Borello says reducing phosphorus pollution from giant hog farms will benefit water quality. But he does not think a genetically modified pig is the answer.
The problem is it does not address the issue of all the other stuff that is very concentrated going into surface water and groundwater.
Stuff such as nitrogen and ammonia. Borrello says a better solution is to reduce the size of hog farms so there aren't so many pigs concentrated in such small spaces. But the EnviroPig is starting to get some traction. When Forsberg and his colleagues created the first generation of EnviroPigs nearly 10 years ago, the question was, could they do it? Today, seven generations of pigs later, the question is, will people eat it? Until recently, the U.S. government hadn't allowed the sale of genetically modified meat, but the Food and Drug Administration recently published guidelines for it. And some industry analysts say you could be eating pork from animals like the EnviroPig as soon as 2011. For the Environment Report, I'm Julie Grant.
The Environment Report is a production of Michigan Radio. Support comes from the Joyce Foundation, the George Gund Foundation, and USDA's Cooperative Extension Service. Have something to say about the Environment Report? Send email to feedback@environmentreport.org.
Google's CEO, Eric Schmidt, believes access to information is a force for good, and he's advising President-elect Barack Obama to make the government more open to the Internet.
Much more use of social networking, much more than just websites for government programs, which was achieved a decade ago.
A profile of Google's Eric Schmidt, later on All Things Considered, from NPR News.
Today from 4 to 7 p.m.
Earth and Sky.
Friday, January 2nd, 2009, the quadranted meteor shower rates as a major shower, but few people ever see it.
This meteor shower makes its best showing before dawn this weekend, as seen from middle and far northern latitudes. The quadrantids are named for an extinct 19th century constellation, Quadrans Muralis, the Wall Quadrant.
And meteor showers are named from the constellations from which they appear to radiate. But the constellation boundaries have been redrawn since the 19th century. Quadrans Muralis is gone. The quadrantid's radiant now lies on the borders of the constellations Draco, Hercules, and Bootes.
You don't have to locate the radiant to watch the meteor shower, but the radiant does have to be fairly high in your sky before you can see these meteors. The quadrantid radiant isn't up until well after midnight. It'll be highest just before dawn.
The quadrantids have a sharp peak that lasts only an hour or two. The peak has to happen while the quadrantid radiant is high in your sky, or you won't see the maximum number of perhaps 60 meteors per hour. If you want to try your luck, find a dark, open sky in the wee hours before dawn this weekend, and look northward for the streaking quadrantid meteors. I'm Deborah Byrd.
And I'm Joel Block.